Good afternoon. It's St. Patrick's Day and it's the late in the afternoon, 17th of March. And it's Paul O'Mahony talking to you from my immobile studio, my office. And I'm reading a book. I'm reading a book called Touched with Fire by Kay Redfield Jemison. And the subtitle of the book is Manic Depressive Illness and the Artistic Temperament. Her better-known book is An Unquiet Mind. And I'd like to quote you some pieces from it. But what put me in mind of doing that is a piece of audio recently by a woman called Calm Water 73, who lives in Israel. And she entitled her audio, Trying to Explain What an Anxiety Disorder Is, How It Feels, and How to Cope. And she did her best to describe it, and I thought to myself, perhaps I can share how some people have experienced depressive mood, severe depression, the downside, if you like, of manic depression. So let me start by quoting Robert Burns, the Scottish poet. I'm groaning under the miseries of a diseased nervous system, a system of all others the most essential to our happiness, or the most productive of our misery. Lord, what is man? Today in the luxuriance of health, exulting in the enjoyment of existence. In a few days, perhaps in a few hours, loaded with conscious, painful being, counting the tardy pace of the lingering moments by the repercussions of anguish and refusing or denied a comforter. Day follows night, and night comes after day, only to curse him with life, which gives him no pleasure. Now, Edgar Allan Poe, in a letter which he wrote in his mid-twenties, had the following to say. My feelings at this moment are pitiable indeed. I am suffering under a depression of spirits such as I have never felt before. I have struggled in vain against the influence of this melancholy. You will believe me when I say that I am still miserable in spite of the great improvement in my circumstances. I say you will believe me, and for this simple reason, that a man who is writing for effect does not write thus. My heart is open before you. If it be worth reading, read it. I am wretched and know not why. Console me, for you can, but let it be quickly, or it will be too late. Write me immediately. Convince me that it is worth one's while, that it is at all necessary to live, and you will prove yourself indeed my friend. Persuade me to do what is right. I do not mean this. I do not mean that you should consider what I now write you as a jest. Oh, pity me, for I feel that my words are incoherent, but I will recover myself. You will not fail to see that I am suffering under a depression of spirits, which will not fail to ruin me, should it be long continued. Now Berlioz, the composer, in his memoirs, had this to say. It is difficult to put into words what I suffered. The longing that seemed to be tearing my heart out by the roots. The dreadful sense of being alone in an empty universe. The agonies that thrilled through me, as if the blood were running ice cold in my veins. The disgust with living, the impossibility of dying. Shakespeare himself never described this torture, but he counts it, in Hamlet, among the terrible of all the evils of existence. I had stopped composing. My mind seemed to become feebler as my feelings grew more intense. I did nothing. One power was left me, to suffer. Berlioz went on. I again became prey to that frightful affliction, psychological, nervous, imaginary, what you will, The fit fell upon me with appalling force. I suffered agonies and lay groaning on the ground, stretching out abandoned arms, convulsively tearing up handfuls of grass and wide-eyed innocent daisies, struggling against the crushing sense of absence, against a mortal isolation. Yet such an attack is not to be compared with the tortures that I have known since then in ever-increasing measure. What can I say that will give some idea of the action of this abominable disease? There are two kinds of spleen, one mocking, active, passionate, malignant, the other morose and wholly passive, when one's only wish is for silence and solitude and the oblivion of sleep. For anyone possessed by this latter kind, nothing has meaning. The destruction of a world would hardly move him. At such times, I could wish the earth were a shell filled with gunpowder, which I would put a match to for my diversion. Now, William Cowper, an 18th century poet, who was actually put in an asylum for his manic depressive illness. Here's what he had to say. The weather is an exact emblem of my mind in its present state. A thick fog envelops everything, and at the same time it freezes intensely. You will tell me that this cold gloom will be succeeded by a cheerful spring, and endeavour to encourage me to hope for a spiritual change resembling it. But it will be lost labour. Nature revives again. But a soul once slain lives no more. The hedge that has been apparently dead is not so. It will burst into leaf and blossom at the appointed time. But no such time is appointed for the stake that stands in it. It is as dead as it seems, and will prove itself no dissembler. The Austrian composer Hugo Wolf, who composed a lot of songs, said this: "What I suffer from this continuous idleness, I'm quite unable to describe. I would like most to hang myself on the nearest branch of the cherry trees standing now in full bloom. This wonderful spring with its secret life and movement troubles me unspeakably. These eternal blue skies lasting for weeks, this continuous sprouting and budding in nature, these coaxing breezes impregnated with spring sunlight and fragrance of flowers make me frantic. Everywhere this bewildering urge for life, fruitfulness, creation. And only I, although like the humblest grass of the fields, one of God's creatures, may not take part in this festival of resurrection, at any rate not except as a spectator, with grief and envy." Wolf goes on, "I appear at times merry, and in good heart, talk to, before others quite reasonably, and it looks as if I felt to. God knows how well within my skin, yet the soul maintains its deathly sleep, and the heart bleeds from a thousand wounds." Now, Edward Thomas, English poet. "O wretch, to whom life and death are alike impossible, most miserable at present in this, that being thus miserable I have my senses continued to me, only that I may look forward to the worst. It is certain, at least, that I have them for no other purpose, and but very imperfectly, even for this. My thoughts are like loose dry sand, which the closer it is grasped slips the sooner away. Mr. Johnson reads to me, but I lose every other sentence through the inevitable wanderings of my mind and experience, as I have these 2 years, the same shattered mode of thinking on every subject and on all occasions. If I seem to write with more connection, it is only because the gaps do not appear. Robert Schumann, the composer. I was little more than a statue, neither cold nor warm. By dint of forced work, life returned gradually. But I am still so timid and fearful that I cannot sleep alone. Do you believe that I have not the courage to travel alone, for fear something might befall me? Violent rushes of blood, unspeakable fear, breathlessness, momentary unconsciousness alternate quickly. Let's go on to Scott Fitzgerald. F. Scott Fitzgerald, in an autobiographical essay called The Crack Up. I found I was good and tired. I could lie around and was glad to, sleeping or dozing sometimes 20 hours a day, and in the intervals trying resolutely not to think. Instead, I made lists, hundreds of lists. I realized that every act of life, from the morning toothbrush to the friend at dinner, had become an effort. Hating the night when I couldn't sleep, and hating the day because it went towards night. I slept on the heart's side now, because I knew that the sooner I could tire that out, even a little, the sooner would come that blessed hour of nightmare, which, like a catharsis, would enable me to better meet the new day. All rather inhuman and undernourished, isn't it? Well, that, children, is the true sign of cracking up. The Irish poet James Clarence Mangan. My nervous and hypochondriacal, melancholic feelings almost verged upon insanity. I seemed to myself to be shut up in a cavern with serpents and scorpions, and all hideous and monstrous things which writhed and hissed around me and discharged their slime and venom over my person. A settled melancholy took possession of my being. A sort of torpor and weariness of life succeeded to my former overexcited sensibilities. Books no longer interested me as before, and my own unshared thoughts were a burden and torment to me. He goes on in this poem. Tell thou the world, when my bones lie whitening amid the last homes of youth and eld, that there was once one whose veins ran lightning no eye beheld. And tell how trampled, derided, hated, and worn by weakness, disease, and wrong, he fled for shelter to God, who mated his soul with song. Tell how this nameless, condemned for years long to herd with demons from hell beneath, saw things that made him, with groans and tears, long for even death. Jared Manley Hopkins. No worst, there is none, pitched past pitch of grief. More pangs will, schooled at four pangs, wilder ring. Comforter, where? Where is your comforting? Mary, mother of us, where is your relief? My cries heave, herds long, huddle in amain, a chief, woe, world sorrow, on an age-old anvil wince and sing. Then lull, then leave off. Fury had shrieked, no lingering. Let me be fell, force I must be brief. Oh, the mind, mind has mountains, cliffs of fall, frightful, sheer, no man fathomed. Hold them cheap. May who ne'er hung there. nor does long or small durance deal with that steep or deep. Here, creep, wretch, under a comfort serves in a whirlwind. All life, death, does end, and each day dies with sleep. Let me see. Who else shall I quote to you? John Keats. No, I shan't quote Keats. I'll quote John Ruskin. I roll on like a ball, with this exception, that contrary to the usual laws of motion, I have no friction to contend with in my mind, and of course have some difficulty in stopping myself when there is nothing else to stop me. I'm almost sick and giddy with the quantity of things in my head, trains of thoughts beginning and branching to infinity, crossing each other and all tempting and wanting to be worked out. Okay, we're moving on to hypomanic stuff, so I'm going to stop. The reason I wanted to read pieces from writers, pieces from successful composers, was that I felt that it would provide some sort of companionship for others who are struggling with melancholy, with depression, with the black dog, to know that it wasn't only ordinary people like ourselves that get depression, but some of the greatest artists have experienced it too. Thanks very much for listening.